artistes. Aïe, aïe, aïe! Haïti en folie, c'est Haïti comme vous ne l'avez encore jamais vu, du 25 au 31 juillet, au quartier des spectacles, Parc La Fontaine et cabaret La Tulipe. Info, haïtienfolie.com.
I went to residential school. I was just 8 years old.
Gayla Kasla. My name is Gennargio Sullivan of the Tlawitsis Nation, originally from Turner Island. You're listening to Wendell exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools.
Jason Whitebear is one of our youngest panelists. He is a residential school survivor.
Gakia Waku Maganak, Nadi, and Wendin Naganag. How Mataki was. I said all my relations in three different languages. Those languages were taken away and given with this one here that I've mastered in residential school. And they told me that once you go there, he says, you're not going to come home with this anymore. You're not going to come home being able to speak Nehewewan. You're not going to be able to speak. But when you do go, what I want you to do is I want you to try and master everything that they give you so that they can never fool us anymore. In my generation, we're at the point now where we understand the nuances between the languages. We can say, bonjour, Anin. I wish I knew a little bit of Arab, but you know, the point being is that we're all sitting around here and we're very learned people. We're very knowledgeable. We know how to say to say a little bit of each other's language nowadays, and that's just us as this language. And I think that's a direct result of residential school, is because we always ask each other, where are you from? Well, how do you say this? How do you say that? So that when you run into somebody else, you're allowed to respect them and say, Tanse, how? Wujuh anin. So regardless of what was taken away from me during my residential school formative years, I haven't lost the ability to see. And so it is with this that I thank each and every one of you. I'd like to say, Ninanaskamun Gakyogi Gwayotsiwa Taaski, and that's Cree for I'm grateful for everything in this land. I had to learn that from a Kukum, because I was speaking in front of chiefs one time and I said, I can't speak the language. So she taught me that little bit. Ninanaskamutaman Gakyogi Gwayotsiwa Taaski. Hi, hi. Thank you.
You have just heard at Window exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools. Both my mother and I attended St. Michael's Residential School in Alert Bay, BC. This is a part of a larger project called Resonating Reconciliation that engages community radio as a tool to help define what reconciliation is. Resonating Reconciliation is meant to help reconcile all Canadians to this shared history. This is the work of the National Campus and Community Radio Association, the Red Jam Slam Society, and this station. Resonating Reconciliation is also supported by the Indian Residential School Survivor Society and is funded by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. To hear more, go to www.ncra.ca/resonating.
My name is Alice Wu, and here are some of the recent headlines. On Saturday, the World Health Organization declared the current monkeypox outbreak to be a global health emergency. This is the organization's highest alert level, aimed at encouraging countries to invest more in treatments and vaccines. There are around 700 cases in Canada, with nearly half in Quebec. And the Quebec government has approved the Moderna vaccine, called Spikevax, for children between 6 months and 5 years old. Parents can get appointments through the province's Clic Santé online health portal. Quebec recommends two doses and waiting at least 8 weeks between doses. Some immunocompromised children may get a third dose. And this week, Pope Francis is visiting Canada. He's in Quebec City from July 27th to July 29th. The Roman Catholic Church says the goal of the visit is to promote healing among the First Nations, Métis, and Inuit communities whose children endured abuse in residential schools run by the church. And Montréal and Place des Arts just became Montreal's 20th and 21st universally accessible metro stations. This means that they now have elevators and wheelchair-accessible entrances. And now for some news you can use. The nonprofit The Yellow Door is looking for volunteers for their Generations program. It fights isolation among older populations and creates intergenerational relationships. Each volunteer is paired with a senior with common interests and is expected to share 1 to 2 hours of their week. For more information, visit yellowdoor.org and click on the Programs tab. And the Open Door Shelter is seeking donations of spare smartphones, as well as several clothing items. To see what items are needed, visit the shelter's new Instagram page, which is Open Door Porte Ouverte. You can also follow the page. And the Fantasia International Film Festival is ongoing in Montreal. It's the largest genre film festival in North America and focuses on films produced outside of Hollywood, including in other continents. The festival takes place in various buildings on the Concordia University campus until August 3rd. For more information, visit fantasiafestival.com. And the Museum of Jewish Montreal is showcasing a classic Jewish food in an event called A Tale of Two Bagels. It discusses how New York and Montreal bagels relate to Jewish cultural identity, and it includes food samples. The event is August 4th at 6 p.m. at the museum's location on Saint-Laurent. Tickets are $10. To reserve yours, visit museemontrealjuif.ca.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is there?
Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news I'm brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are one day into the month of July. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You are tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CKUT's Community News Department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, some headlines. Then, an interview with Maxime Royalout from Reclac, on the housing crisis and moving day in Montreal. All that and more, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. You are listening to The Avalanche, where all abilities are welcome. If you'd like to get involved, you can call 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news@ckut.ca. You can also follow us on Twitter at @avalancheckut.
July 1st is also moving day in so-called Montreal. As thousands of households move into new apartments, some will be left without a place to call home. We are joined by Maxime Royalard from Le Clac to speak about the housing crisis and how COVID-19 has impacted an already dire situation. If you'd like more information on Le Clac or any of its campaigns, you can access more information at rclalq.qc.ca. Again, that's rclalq.qc.ca. So hi, I'm Zoe, and I'm joined by Maxime from the RCLALQ. So Maxime, what is your organization and what do you do within it?
So we are a coalition of tenants associations and housing committees over the province of Quebec. We have around 50 members, which are community organizations that help tenants and defend their rights, but also groups that are fighting for the right to housing. So basically doing some pressure on all governments to make tenants' rights advance and to protect tenants better.
And what's an example of some of the advocacy you do within your organization?
We do pretty much all kind of stuff. Like we go out on the street, protest government decision or non-decisions. We also make a lot of information flyers so that tenants know their rights better and know how to defend their rights against their landlords. But what our members do a lot is to only get calls and from tenants and help them with their different situation, which is like a rent increase or a repossession of a dwelling. So we help tenants to actually get along with tenants' rights.
So we're speaking on July 1st, which is known in Montreal as Moving Day. How does the rental market differ this year in comparison to years prior?
Well, it's worse this year than last year because the vacancy rate is very low, especially in central neighborhoods in Montreal. It's like around 1%. And if you look at big apartments for families, for example, it's almost 0%. So there's basically no apartment available. If you go online right now on Kijiji, you'll find some apartments, but they are really expensive, more than $1,500, $2,000, even more than that. So for low-income households, there's no way you can rent that. And basically, you'll have a really hard time to find an apartment. And this year, the pandemic made things worse because it kind of happened at the worst time of the year, which is mid-March, and where it's the time of the year where we renew our lease and where we start looking for apartments. And so visiting apartments were very complicated and everything was postponed until like a month ago. So it made things very hard for tenants. Everything was postponed. So it made kind of, since there were so little apartments available and everything was postponed. So everyone at the same time were looking for apartments during May and June, which is kind of late. Usually you're looking like in March, April. There's always people looking still in May and June, but everyone this year was looking at the same time. So it kind of made things worse. And for landlords, it made things easier for them to discriminate people with disabilities, families with children, people of colors, were more discriminated this year. And that's very bad because it's very hard to fight the discrimination. It's a really long shot. Not many people are actually willing to do it because, you know, it takes years to maybe get a few thousand dollars. But landlord felt more free to discriminate this year, and that's a shame. We condemned that like a few weeks ago, but still the government doesn't do much about it.
And what are some examples of this discrimination? For example, like upfront costs or just flat out refusing to see people based on their application. What are some examples of how this discrimination manifests in people's apartment search?
Well, you know, some people never get called back because they have a different name, which is not very like French or Quebec wise. But also when you visit apartments, you kind of feel it that the landlord is not very willing to accept you based on your income, based on the color of your skin, some stuff like that. And you know, sometimes the landlord will be very nice with you, but you'll never get a call back. And that's what happened most of the time. On the other hand, you get some landlords that are all for it, and in their Kijiji or Facebook ads, they just write it down plainly, like, I'm looking for a certain type of people, no children allowed, even though it's not legal to do so. So we see all sort of stuff, but it vary from plain discrimination or like kind of more hidden discrimination.
And do you feel with the vacancy rate and the scarcity of available quality apartments that landlords are able to take advantage of the system by, for example, taking more than the first month's rent and taking advantage of people not knowing their rights?
Yeah, we see that all the time. And when the vacancy rate is low, there's a tendency that landlord use this situation to ask for more, for example, for security deposit, even though it's not legal in Quebec. And many people don't know their rights, but even if they know it, they are afraid to actually, you know, fight for it. Because if the landlord, for example, tell you, well, there's a 1 month security deposit here, and if you want the apartment, you'll need to give it to me. And if the tenant goes, well, you know, it's illegal here, I don't have to give you that. Well, you know, the landlord will just, well, I'll just go with the person after you. And there's dozens of people like who wants this apartment. So, well, good luck finding an apartment. So there's always this balance of like, we have rights, but can we always use them? That's two different stories.
So the Institute for Research in Socioeconomic Information, IRIS, recently released a report on the profitability of real estate and rental housing. What's outlined in this report?
Well, it's online something that we've seen for a very long time, that real estate is very profitable. You can make a lot of money with it. And when, you know, the landlords association are always going publicly saying it's not profitable enough, when we make repairs, it can take 35 years to get our money back. And we wanted, with this report, I'm very happy because we kind of see that this all, you know, argument from the landlord association are incorrect, and they're not saying all the truth about the real estate market and how profitable it is. And with this report, we see you can make a lot of money on the long term, and even though in the short term, if you make like flips and stuff like that. So I think what we learn from that is that we need to control this crazy rental market, because it went wild. We need to control it, so that rents are not increasing too fast, and that getting a home, getting an apartment, remain possible for everyone.
Do you feel that this report disproves claims made by landlords in regards to profitability? And how could this report translate into active legislation against the raising of rent, for example?
Yeah, it basically tells us that if you make repairs, if you have real estate properties, if you have rent, you make money on the long term, and a lot. What the report shows us is you can basically make more money with real estate than if you go out and buy stocks on the stock market, which is pretty surprising, because you know, real estate, housing, apartments are a basic human right. Is it normal that people make more money out of it than stock market? I don't think so. And what we hope for that is that the Quebec government does not go in the demand with the demand of the landlords association by changing bylaws of allowing landlords to increase rents and more rapidly. We really hope that they won't go there, and on the contrary, that they will control better rent increases, that they will implement a rent registry, so that when people move out, the rent is not increasing too much. And also, it shows us that the private housing market does not respond to the needs of everyone. So we need the Quebec government and also the federal government to build more social housing units.
In your response letter, you mentioned landlord associations have requested changing to the regulation in order to increase rents. What kind of changes are they advocating for?
So basically, they want to be able to increase rents faster when they make major repairs. As for now, there's like a certain limit of what you can increase for every $1,000 you put into the building or the apartment. So basically, it's very like complicated bylaw, but they just want to the numbers to be higher. So when they make repairs, they can increase faster the rents of the tenants.
And how would these changes impact renters?
Well, this will have huge impacts because rents will be increasing at a faster pace. And like, I mean, as we shown last week, rents are increasing already really fast. In Montreal, over 5 years, rents on Kijiji have increased by 40%. And if the government were to change the bylaw for allowing landlords to increase their rents faster when they make repairs, it would be even worse. So we don't want that to happen. And basically, in the end, we don't want Montreal to become the next Toronto or the next Vancouver. We want Montreal to stay available for everyone, to have affordable rents for everyone, and to not become like Vancouver or Toronto, when all the low-income tenants have left the city, or they just are basically left out on the street.
And how do short-term rentals like Airbnb impact the rental market?
That's a very interesting one, because of the pandemic with the tourism that kind of crashed, it really affected the Airbnb markets. And we saw some Airbnb units getting back on the normal private rental market, but at really huge prices, like $2,000 for a fully furnished apartment on the Plateau Mont-Royal, for instance. But it was not enough apartments getting back on the market to actually affect the prices. And I think that many landlords actually keep their apartments for short term, and they hope that tourism will kick back. And it probably will with the domestic tourism in Quebec. But again, there were a new bylaw on May 1st to make Airbnb units more difficult to rent out if it's for your second home, for example. So hopefully the Quebec government will actually go after all those illegal Airbnb units, and they will get back on the normal rental market.
And when these units get back on the rental market, do they continue to be short-term rentals, or do the landlords translate the rentals to a long-term proper Quebec lease?
If they have the right to be short-term, they can keep it that way. But most of them were illegal. They were not respecting the borough laws. So they need to be back on the long-term market, because that's what they were meant for, and that's what they need to be for. If Revenu Quebec and the Quebec government, and also the city of Montreal, is doing their job, they should get back on the long-term private market.
And what makes an Airbnb type of rental illegal?
You need to respect the zoning system of the borough. So, for example, on the Plateau Mont-Royal, you can only rent out your secondary house on Saint-Denis or Saint-Laurent. So if you're out of that and it's not your primary home, it's illegal, basically. So most of the units were totally illegal, and there were thousands of them all over the city, mostly in the city center, Plateau, Rosemont-Petite-Patrie. But it's getting like elsewhere as well. Like we see more in Hochelaga in the southwest. So that's why we need to go against them and to go after them and to actually put those units back on the where they belong, on the long-term rental market.
And if they are taken off the market, what's the possibility that they just return? What kind of legislation and penalty kind of system is available by the individual boroughs to go after these landlords?
Yeah, it's less the borough that actually give fines. It's Revenu Quebec that have the power here. And they have huge powers. They can give like very expensive fines of thousands of dollars, but they need to do it. And that's what we're really hoping over the next months, over the next years, that they will go after them, that they will go after the illegal landlords that put all those units on the Airbnb market.
Do you feel that the city has done enough to implement restrictions on short-term rentals?
Well, they've done more than the previous administration. Are they doing enough? I don't think so. I think what we like to see is like a ban of all those Airbnb units, especially for secondary users. If it's not your primary home and you're not rented out, like renting it just a few days or a few weeks a year, that's not too bad. But if you're taking a unit only for that and taking it out of the rental market only for tourism, and that should be totally illegal, and we want the city and the borough to actually go that way.
And what are some more examples on how the city can limit the impact of short-term rentals on the long-term rental market?
Adopt new bylaws so that all secondary homes should not be for Airbnb or short-term rentals. They should be only for what they're meant to be, which is apartment for local residents or people that want to live in the neighborhood, and not for tourism, because we need those units. The vacancy rate is very low. Rents are increasing really fast. So the last thing we need is more Airbnb units, which are affecting the rental market a lot.
And how has Airbnb impacted the culture of renting for renters?
It increases rents all over the place because, you know, the value of those units are increasing. The value of real estate in general is increasing at a really fast pace. And Airbnb plays a role in that because you can make more money out of short-term units. So it affects that. It also changed the culture and like the commercial offers in the neighborhood. Like some shops are changing. They are more going after tourism. So it can affect like also the life of people that are living in this neighborhood. What we also hear a lot is that people complaining for Airbnb hosts and users that make big parties in the neighborhood, which is used to be very quiet. Also, Airbnb users that just put the trash whenever they want on the street, and you know, over the summer it smells, and it affects the lives of people that were living for there quietly, and suddenly all those tourists are getting in the neighborhood. And it was not meant for that. So I think people are really affected by that.
And how does it impact gentrification of an area?
Well, it increased rents, and you know, some people get evicted so that their units can be turned into Airbnbs. That we saw a lot over the last few years. That is typically gentrification. Rent increases, tenants who get evicted so that the landlord can make more profit. So basically that's pure gentrification, and that's a shame that people get evicted from their home so that the landlord can make more money out of tourists.
So on the topic of rent eviction, would you be able to talk about what a rent eviction is for those unaware?
Well, a typical rent eviction is where the landlord actually tried to buy out the tenants or to put some pressure on the tenants so that they leave in order to make some, you know, sometimes major repairs, sometimes like more domestic repairs. And the landlord, basically, the goal behind this is to kick out the tenants to increase rent very rapidly. So we have some example of rents increasing by a few $100 just over a few months. And those evictions are usually illegal. If the landlord were to go at the rental board, they will never get this eviction, because when you have a major repair, the tenants can keep their apartment, so they can come back after the repairs. But in this case, the landlord actually put some pressure and offer some money so that the tenants never get back. And so they basically kick them out and increase rents by doing some little repairs.
And do you feel that the rate of rent eviction is higher this year in comparison to years prior?
That's very hard to tell. We don't have like good numbers with evictions. We hear stories here and there. Housing committees in central neighborhoods in Montreal hear a lot of eviction cases, but it's hard to say. But whenever the vacancy rate is low, landlords want to profit from this, and they will try to evict tenants by any means. And eviction is a more common one. And I know that some borrowers want to fight on some kind of evictions, but that's only the tip of the iceberg, because those are legal eviction that you need to go through the rental board. But rental eviction are not following any law, any rental board decision. They just go out there and, you know, sometimes we see some goons getting out and knocking on tenants' doors and say, well, you need to leave in a month, or your life is going to be a misery. You're going to wake up at 6 every morning with some major repairs next door, and you don't want to live that, so you better take this money and go.
And do you feel like this type of landlord harassment is more commonplace than years prior, when the vacancy rate was a bit better?
Yeah, totally. The vacancy rate has decreased for 3 years now, I think, and we see more and more of an eviction. And I think even if the vacancy rate increases over the next few years, I'm pretty sure we'll still see the eviction going up, because there's so much money that can be made out of it, and the rules are very easy to bypass and to just evict tenants. So if the Quebec government and the city is not doing more than that, we're going to see like a huge increase of eviction. And on top of that, and then the core of the problem is, if we don't fight real estate speculation, we won't see like the end of that, because there's so much money that can be made out of real estate increasing at a really fast pace.
And what is real estate speculation?
Well, basically, when you buy some buildings, apartments, at a certain price, over the years it increases really fast. And if you make change at the apartment or the units, you can sell it, like, you know, even a year after or 2 years after, at a really higher price. And some people are actually expert of that, making flips, reselling the building at a really huge price just after they bought it. And that affects real estate and housing in general, because for small landlords that want to buy a building, let's say at $800,000, and that used to be like half of that a few years ago, well, when they buy this building and that the rents are quite low, they want to increase the rent really rapidly, because the mortgage is really big. And that's a problem here. They should not be buying those buildings at this price and wants to increase rents straight away with the tenants, or evict them so that they can make more money and pay the mortgage. And so we need to look at the problem the other way around and fight the real estate prices at the core. That's the main problem here.
And do you feel that the bylaw 20-20-20, which would mandate that new large-scale development projects dedicate 20% of units to social housing, 20% to affordable housing, and 20% to larger multiple-bedroom units, is an effective way of impacting the housing crisis?
The 20-20-20 bylaw is good in a way that it will force real estate promoters and new housing buildings to have social housing units, but that's not enough. What we should see is not some condo buildings that will have some social housing in it, but we need buildings that only have social housing units and that are only for affordable apartments. With this bylaw, the city is kind of like asking private builders to have some social housing unit, but what the city and the Quebec government should be doing is putting more money on the table, so to buy some buildings, to buy some some places in Montreal to only build social housing units, some co-op, some HLM. And
what would be a way of improving this legislation?
I think the legislation itself is pretty good, but that's point is we should not be only waiting after this bylaw to build social housing units. The city need to be more proactive, but the city need more money from the Quebec government so to build more social housing and projects. But the problem here again is that because of the real estate and speculation problem, it's so expensive now to buy some buildings or some places around the city that it gets very difficult to the city to actually make social housing projects. So again, we need to fight the speculation and so that real estate prices need to go down again.
And what's the current state of social housing in Montreal? Do you feel that the application process is fairly quick, or are there significant wait times? For example, if someone were trying to apply for social housing now during this rental season, what would their process look like?
It's a terrible process. It takes years to actually get the social housing unit in Montreal. If you go on the HLM waiting list, it can take up to 2 or 3 years, if you're lucky, to get a social housing unit. So that means we need way more. And so that we need to build more. We need to fix the HLM and other co-op that are in bad shape, that are near to closure. There's a HLM in Côte des Neiges that it's been closed for years because it's in too bad shape and no one's living in there. But we need to repair those units so that people can go in and live in it. And that's the problem here. We don't have enough money to build more social housing units and to assure that they are in good shape and that people can still live in it.
What is the demand for more social housing in Montreal? How many more units or just buildings in general should the city be building in order to keep up with the city's ever-changing needs?
So basically with the Frappe-Rue, we're asking the Quebec government and with the cities all over the province to build 50,000 social housing units. And Montreal basically need half of that because that's around half of the population of the province of Quebec. So 25,000 social housing units need to be built around the city of Montreal so that the needs are met and that everyone that needs a social housing unit get one.
So my borough of Verdun recently debated a bylaw that would ban the conversion of complexes into single family units, ban the fusion of different apartments, and to ban the conversion of units to condos. How do actions like these taken by landlords impact the rental market?
Those bylaws are a good step forward. But then again, the landlords are fighting back pretty hard. And what we hear is that some borough might actually step back and not go forward with those bylaws. But I really hope they won't. And they need to actually go further and protect tenants better against those type of eviction. Because, you know, with the law in Quebec, a landlord can divide or enlarge the units. They have the right to evict tenants forever to do so. What the central boroughs in Montreal wants to do is that it would be more difficult for a landlord to wants to enlarge or divide an apartment to get the permit for it, because you need the permit at the rental board to actually go forward and evict the tenants. So basically what the boroughs are saying is like, well, if you want to do that, we'll look at everyone, at every landlord that want to go through this process. And if tenants are to get evicted, you won't get the permit for it. So that's a really good thing. But again, it's only the tip of the iceberg because most landlords are not following the law and they just go out there and you know, evict tenants with harassment or offering money and stuff like that.
because of the fact that a lot of these rent evictions or bending of housing rules are done under the table, is there a way of being able to measure the effectiveness of these sort of bylaws?
Well, we will need the numbers from the boroughs, because right now we don't have the numbers of how many landlords were asking for permits to evict tenants in order to divide to enlarge apartments. So we'll see in the future if it will be effective when we see if the numbers decrease over the years with those type of eviction. But my guts tell me that landlords will just go around and won't be using those type of eviction anymore, and would just go with typical rent eviction. Like I said earlier, they will just harass tenants, offer them a few $1,000, and they don't need a permit for that. And when the tenant is out, they can go to the borough and ask for the permit to divide or enlarge the apartment.
So earlier in our discussion, you mentioned a registry of sorts for rent. What would this registry look like, and how would it benefit the rental market?
So a rent registry will basically be all rents in Quebec will be public with the address. So if you're looking for apartments, you could go on the rent registry and look what was the previous rent, what were the previous tenants paying for that apartment. So when you actually sign the lease, you'll actually know what was the rent before that. And what we think is that it will be way harder for landlords to actually increase rent by hundreds of dollars when new people are coming in, because it will be public. So that's the main purpose of that.
And would the rents on this registry be sourced from the tenants or the landlords?
No, it wouldn't need to be the landlord actually fill a form every year. They're already filling a form every year, so we're thinking they could just add the rent on this form that they need to fill every winter. So yeah, basically all landlord will need to fill this form, and we will have this rent registry really easily. And if a landlord is not actually publicly saying the rent, that probably means there's something behind it, because some landlords are not actually declaring all their incomes to the Revenu Quebec. So I think that will be very good for the state as well, because probably we'll make more tax revenue from landlords who are not declaring all their incomes.
And with aside from increasing public knowledge on their rights as renters, for example, knowing that there's only a certain fixed amount that a rent can be raised by, what are some other potential consequences of a registry like this?
Well, it's the main one. Like, we will not see major rent increase anymore when people are leaving the apartment. And what we see more and more is that people are giving away the lease to a new tenant so that the landlord cannot increase the rent easily. But the rent registry will kind of do the job here, because landlord will not be able to increase rent that easily. And the problem most of the time is that on the lease, the landlord is not filling the G section where the previous rent needs to be declared. And so with the rent registry, it will be easier for tenants to actually go at the rental board and say, well, no, the landlord increased way too much here. I want the tribunal to fix the new rent so that it's more fair for everyone.
If we were to completely reform the way that we view housing as a society here in Montreal or in Quebec as a whole, what would that look like?
Oh, that's a very interesting one. What I think in the end, we should be looking at housing as a basic human right and not depend on the private market to house everyone. I mean, some people should still be able to buy their home, but when it comes to renting, I think it should be socialized, and that we should be seeing more co-op, more HLM, we should create new ways of seeing how we should be living collectively, not privately, in our apartment, so that no one is making profit out of our rent, but it should be collectively used to house everyone, to repair our buildings and apartments, and that's how we see it. But while we achieving that goal, we should be controlling rents better and protect tenants' rights better as well, because we see all those evictions, all those abusive rent increase every year, so that needs to stop.
And do you feel that without effective rent control, Montreal could be similar to the rental markets of Toronto, for example, or Vancouver?
Yeah, I'm afraid over the next decade, maybe sooner, will be the next Vancouver, the next Toronto. And that's a really shame. And because we are saying to the city, the Quebec government right now, it's time to move and to act right now in order to not become the next Vancouver. And well, they're not responding really. And that's a shame, because we'll wake up in 10 years with no low-income tenants and low-income families in the city anymore, or they will be pushed out of the boundaries of the city. That's a real shame. We won't have like mixed neighborhoods anymore. It will be only like rich households who can afford to live in central neighborhood. And we don't want to become that. And it will if we don't act really, really quickly.
Back to today, move-in day. What kind of last-minute support is there available for those finding themselves without a place to move into today?
Well, people that are still looking for apartments and cannot find one can call the Office Municipal d'Habitation de Montréal. They have a service that can house people for emergency reasons, so you need to call them fast. And you might get help over the next few days, and you can be housed for a few weeks until you find a new home.
And do you feel that the city is doing enough to ensure that there are shelters available for those without housing during moving day during typical years? And how does COVID impact this avenue?
Well, as I said earlier, the COVID situation made things worse for everyone, even the city, because everything was postponed. So it made things worse in a way, because more tenants were unsure they could find an apartment. Yes, the city could have done more by telling tenants earlier they could get help, they could be housed in hotels for a certain amount of weeks. And some critics said that they only heard like today or yesterday they couldn't get actual help from the city. And it was very stressful for tenants to not be able to actually be sure 100% that they could be housed by the city today or tomorrow. But still, the city is needing more resources from the Quebec government, because that costs a lot of money. And the city of Montreal kind of struggle with their budget, because it's a city that is tied with the real estate taxes. So yeah, the Quebec government should be the one here that, more criticized, because they kind of got the money a little bit too late, like at the beginning of June. It should have been way earlier than that.
And what are some other avenues that people usually take, for example, when they can't find housing and moving day approaches?
Well, a lot of people, like the numbers we have from the city is only the tip of the iceberg. Like around 100 people are gonna be housed by the city. But that's only the tip of the iceberg. Most people who are not looking or have not found an apartment will be going to friends, to families for a short term or even a long term until they find an apartment. So that means probably thousands of people in the city of Montreal who are without a home, but they won't be on the street. They will be at friends or families. And that can be very hard, especially if we have a second wave of COVID-19. If you're living in an apartment with a lot of people in it, it can get things very hard. And that will be a real problem over the summer and fall, especially when the second wave hit. Because, you know, if you're too many people in an apartment, it you have more chance to be infected by the virus. It's harder to be physically distancing. So yeah.
And how does that housing crisis impact multi-marginalized folks?
You know, people with disabilities and elderly have a harder time finding a good place for themselves because, you know, apartments in Montreal are not fit for everyone, especially with this staircase everywhere and stuff like that. We don't have like major buildings like in Toronto, for example, with escalators. So it can get, with elevators, it can get really difficult to find an apartment, and not many landlords are willing to actually transform the unit into apartments that are easier for people with disabilities to actually live in it. So it can get really difficult. And because of the shortage and the scarcity of apartments in Montreal, it just makes things worse for everyone, and especially for people with disabilities, elderly, people that get usually discriminated. It's just worse.
And how can people listening get involved with housing rights activism?
Well, you can join your local housing committee. We have all sorts of political campaign that we are doing over the years to actually convince our different governments to change laws and bylaws that affect tenants' lives. And so, for example, to control rents, to implement a rent registry, to build more social housing units. And we have all, it's quite nice in Quebec that we have all those community organizations that are financed by the state and are helping marginalized folks, low-income people, to actually defend their rights. And that's very unique in the world. And Quebec has all those community organizations, and we should join them and use them so that we have like a more just and society in Quebec.
And how can listeners learn more about your organization?
Well, you can follow us on Facebook, of course. Facebook page is our acronym, so RCLALQ, RECLAC. And you can go on a website to actually learn about us, about our history, but also to get some flyers that you could distribute to the people around you, to your neighbors, so that they can know their rights better and to actually fight a rent increase, to fight an eviction, for example. So we produce all those kind of information that needs to be distributed, and that's the most important thing here, because we don't have the capacity to reach to everyone. So we need people to actually reach out to everyone they can, so people know the rights better.
All right, thank you, Maxime.
You're welcome.
It was nice talking to you.
Yep.
There is this thing going on. We realize our consciousness is affected. There is this thing going on. What is called
the news, brought to you live.
Welcome back to The Avalanche. You are just listening to an interview from Maxime Roy Allat from the CLAC on moving day in Montreal and the housing crisis. That completes this episode of The Avalanche, a special edition of Off the Hour, airing every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. To stay up to date with The Avalanche, check out our Twitter at @avalancheckut. Again, that's @avalancheckut. Thank yous are due to all those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CKUT possible. If you would like more information on anything you heard tonight, or would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact The Avalanche at avalancheckut.ca or CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or news@ckut.ca. Stay tuned for Hersey. That's up now. We'll be right back.
I went to residential school. I was just 8 years old.
Gayla Kasla. My name is Gennargio Sullivan of the Tlawitsis Nation, originally from Turner Island. You're listening to Wendell exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools.
Our next speaker here is Viola Thomas. She is also a residential school survivor.
Part of our obligation where I work with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada is to inform Canadians on the truth. But I believe that as more Canadian people understand that this was Canadian law and Canadian policy, and that Canadians need to take responsibility for the shared history, I also believe that Canadians have a responsibility to resonate reconciliation with the First Peoples of this country. And what did we learn when we went to the school? We learned how to be bullies, how to be mean to each other, how not to love, how not to feel a great sense of pride of who you are and where you come from. I learned about racism, and I didn't know what that was. I really didn't know what racism was. I learned about sexism, and as a young girl, I didn't know about sexism. There were many forms of abuse, not just the physical, but the intellectual abuse. To always be reminded that you're stupid and that you're nobody. To be told by your teachers and by the folks from the church that you're a savage, you're a squaw. And I just want to close with one of my heroes, a woman by the name of Winona LaDuc. And I offer this to all of our brothers and sisters who were abducted to residential schools. And I offer this with a good heart to non-Indigenous people so that they will pick up the torch. And this is what she says. There is no social change fairy. There is only change made by the hands of individuals.
You have just heard at Window exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools. Both my mother and I attended St. Michael's Residential School in Alert Bay, BC. This is a part of a larger project called Resonating Reconciliation that engages community radio as a tool to help define what reconciliation is. Resonating Reconciliation is meant to help reconcile all Canadians to their shared history. This is the work of the National Campus and Community Radio Association, the Red Jam Slam Society, and this station. Resonating Reconciliation is also supported by the Indian Residential School Survivor Society and is funded by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. To hear more, go to www.ncra.ca/resonating.
CKUT is a messenger, teaching the youth about roots and culture, and tell the masses them to remember Jah. That's all I need when I am. Well, CKUT is a messenger, teaching the youth about roots and culture, and tell the masses them to remember Jah. That's all I need when I am. Well, 90.3 FM. It's CKUT, the Cultural Radio Station. Radio McGill. Blessed love. The messenger. Take it away.
Thank you. allô à toutes avec un crisse de gros E, à cause que c'est toujours bien la base d'essayer d'inclure tout le monde.
La très bienvenue à ce nouvel épisode de votre podcast féministe interrégional et le plus intersectionnel possible préféré. À tous les épisodes, on se garoche à la vitesse de l'éclair dans un thème qui nous touche puis qui nous intéresse vivement. On l'observe avec nos lunettes nerd radicales de presque trentenaires, ben à bout de ce monde-là qu'on travaille à chimer à grands coups de podcast.
Dans le fond, tout ou pantoute, c'est comme le moton de tape que tu colles sur le plancher quand tu joues dans une salle de spectacle trop chic puis que tu veux pas percer le plancher avec ton pic de violoncelle. Aujourd'hui, on parle de dating et de santé sexuelle et reproductive, mais sous un angle particulier. On va parler de handicap physique, d'inclusivité, de capacitisme et d'application de rencontres.
Pour en parler, j'ai rencontré Laurence Reynaud-Rioux, qui est chargée de projet pour Access Plus, qui est un projet de la Fédération du Québec pour le planning des naissances.